What is up, Pitcherless family? Welcome to another episode of Hacks and Jacks, episode number 154. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here as always with senior analyst Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on Pitcherless. Scott, how was your weekend as we close out this month of June?
No, it was good. So it was just my birthday, turned 38 years old this last week. So that wasn't so bad. I got a couple hours to myself, which is the gift I ask for every year. So yeah, can't complain.
Beautiful man. Congratulations. Happy birthday. Another year around the sun always feels good. And hopefully you had a good Father's Day as well. I know that was a couple weeks ago now, but hopefully that went well.
Yeah, it feels like ages ago. It was all just last week. Last week.
Yeah, you're right. I've got so much going on. You're right. I'm getting ahead
Sunday
of myself.
And Monday.
Can you tell I've got kids? Can you tell?
We're living life the hard way right now, man.
Well, let's get into some hitters here on Pitcherless, the Hacks and Jacks episode, or the Hacks and Jacks podcast dedicated to hitters on this lovely fantasy baseball website. We'll jump right into news and notes. We'll start in Chicago, where the Cubs have sent designated hitter Moises Ballesteros to AAA after really a lackluster month or so of production. Scott, are there any Cubs right now that are worthy of a roster spot, or are we just going to wait until they turn things around as a team?
I mean, there's a couple worth rostering, of course. You know, Pete Crow Armstrong is setting the world on fire, but I think the guy who's sort of, I mean, no real playing time changes with the loss of Moises Ballesteros because he was playing really poor. I mean, no one was really rostering him. He was playing really poor. He had like a little flash early in the season, and then it all kind of just faded away. A couple guys have been up and down. I think two guys right now, not named Pete Crow Armstrong, that might be on your wire at some point, might be somewhat interesting. So Carson Kelly's this really streaky catcher who literally plays every other day. This is always the way it's been. Doesn't matter how hot he gets. He and Miguel Amaya play like every other day. It's just how it goes. So if you need a streaming catcher and you don't mind the fact he will sit half like every other day, and it's not a platoon thing. It's literally like every other day. He'll almost never play two games in a row. He's someone you could stream at catcher. And then of course there's Dansby Swanson, who had about a million RBI in this last series. He had been, you know, he had a really good April, then was absolutely dreadful for all of May, absolutely dreadful for the last several weeks, really. And then just in his last six games has four home runs and God knows how many RBI, 18 RBI in his last six games. So it's absolutely wild. Does this mean, and this is going to be a theme throughout the episode, folks, but like, does this mean Dansby Swanson's figured it out? Does it mean that he's made some major change? Like, no, first of all, this kind of counting stat production, even with the number of hits he has, is ludicrous, right? To have two hits and seven RBI in one game, like that's really hard to replicate, right? Like, Riley Green has a bunch of hits the last couple games, including a bunch of doubles and all these things, and he has like one RBI for it, right? Like, this stuff goes up and down, so that's kind of hard. Plus he hits, you know, ninth at the bottom of the lineup. Is Dansby Swanson worthy of a scoop if you like need a middle infielder because you just lost Zach Gieloff or something? Sure, you can try to ride this hot streak. Like, he's been good before, he'll probably be good again. I mean, his season long total right now is dreadful, but he could be all right. He's probably worth, you know, he's worth a stream if you need the middle infielder, but you know, he sneaks into the back of the rankings, which we'll talk about in the second half of the episode. But otherwise, I mean, nothing really changes for this lineup or this team. They continue to be a really streaky team offensively and just overall, right? They win in bunches and they lose in bunches. And I wish I could tell you some scientific reason for that, but there isn't one. It's because it's a bunch of humans who play together and they do weird stuff like this.
Yeah, the worst part about Dansby scoring or driving in all those runs in such a short time is that if he's not on your roster right now, they don't count. Like, that's the part.
And he wasn't. Unless you're in a very deep league, he was so, there's no way you held on to him this whole time just to get that. That's going to be like 20% of his entire production this season. Maybe 30% of his entire production this season will be right there. He has 46 RBI on the year, and he got 18 of those in the last six games. That's darn near half.
Yeah, it's wild. We'll move on to a handful of guys that head to the IL this week. Some of them matter a lot more than others. Miami Marlins catcher Liam Hicks goes to the IL. Kansas City Royals infielder Mikel Garcia, Athletics infielder Zach Eloff, and New York Mets infielder Marcus Semien all head to the IL. Scott, obviously Hicks is probably the one who was most rostered out of those, which is kind of weird to say. But you know, if you're looking to stream a catcher, who you're looking at, and then of those three infielders, if you're looking to stream an infielder not named Dansby Swanson, who might you be targeting?
Yeah, so a catcher, if you know, we did just mention Carson Kelly, who's playing really well right now, but he only plays every other day. You might get a little more juice out of the guy who's been playing catcher in Miami the last few weeks, even before Liam Hicks got hurt, since Hicks has moved to first base mostly in DH. Joe Mack. Joe Mack is not a guy with like a, you know, he's not like an unknown prospect. He was like a top 100-ish prospect, depending on who you talk to. He's definitely got power. The hit tool was what was a little bit suspect. He's done well to bring the strikeouts down the last couple of weeks. So Joe Mack might be someone you could use to stream in the meantime, especially as he, you know, continues to push that strikeout rate down and the walk rate up. In a points league, it's going to be really hard to replace that. You're hoping that maybe like a guy like Kyber Ruiz or something is available. Otherwise, there's just not really a ton to go with. Couple other catchers I could maybe name would be like Francisco Alvarez is swinging a hot bat. If you want some power out of the catcher spot, he could do it. And you know, another guy who's been a little bit hot for the Pirates, I don't rank him yet, but Andy Rodriguez has been playing pretty well for the Pirates. That's another, you know, if you're just desperate for a streamer at catcher, that's probably another name I would look at as a guy who's probably not rostered in very many leagues right now.
And then in the middle infield, just drop a couple names that might make sense to replace like the Mikel Garcias and Zach Eloffs of the world.
Yeah. And again, I mean, we talked about Swanson already. Guy we were just talking about before the show, Nick Lofton from Kansas City. He's second, third base, outfield eligible, depending on where you are. And I'm not going to tell you that this is like a high-end prospect or anything like that, but he is ripping the cover off the ball over the last, you know, week or so. And over the last couple of games, they've moved Nick Lofton to hitting second. So, you know, with a lot of that is because Bobby Witt's been out and he should be back on Friday. But, you know, Nick Lofton swinging a hot bat, eligible at a lot of the same positions as like a guy like Zach Eloff. So if you're going to rot, you know, if you want to just ride a hot streak, his is as good as anyone else's, right? You know, he's probably, you know, not going to stick around on your roster for very long, but he's out there. If you need like a more volume based guy, I don't trust him for very long, but Mason Wynn is probably not rostered in whatever format you're in. And he's been performing pretty well the last few weeks. Nick Gonzalez has been underrated kind of all season by everybody. So if he's kind of fallen through the cracks in your league, he's someone that can be a solid, if unspectacular, replacement for a short term. Those are probably the names that jump out at me the most that are like, I mean, again, there may be guys who are better who might for some reason still be on your waiver wire, like a Nassim Nunez who's hitting really well and steals a bunch of bases, or, you know, Brooks Lee, who just continues to mash for the Twins out of sort of nowhere. So those guys would obviously be better options, but more realistically, you're probably looking for the other names I mentioned, like a Gonzalez or a Lofton or something like that.
We'll switch over to guys coming back from the IL, moving from bad news to good news. A handful of fantasy relevant names come back from the IL this week. Ellie De La Cruz for the Reds, and of course, New York Mets shortstop Francisco Lindor are both back. And then in the outfield, you have Colorado Rockies outfielder Mickey Moniak, Toronto Blue Jays Dalton Varsho, and Seattle Mariners Randy Arozarena all come back from the IL. Hopefully, you held on to them. Moniak and Varsho, depending on league depth, may have been on the waiver wire because of the injury, but in all likelihood, they're probably scooped.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't really care if you go and scoop Moniak or not. He's lefty only, he only plays against righties. He will not play against lefties. He'll get pinch hit appearances, so he only played one of the three games that he's been back, and he got a pinch hit in the two games he was out. Again, he's a power streamer. He's just the phrase you see all over the hitter list, which is streaky lefty platoon guy. That's what Moniak is. He was rocking out early in the season. I know some people really buy it. I don't. He just runs hot and cold. And you saw the hot, now you're getting the cold. Another guy who does run hot and cold, though, that you probably should scoop is Dalton Varsho. So Varsho was not playing very well before he hit the IL at all. But we see flashes of him being a really, really good player every single season. It just only lasts for a little while because he's both streaky and injury prone. So, you know, worth keeping an eye on. But in the four games he's been back, he's got a hit in each one. He's also got two home runs. He's actually stolen a couple of bases too, like right out of the gate. So Dalton Varsho, worth a scoop as a guy who's going, you know, who is ranked now, but, you know, kind of comes on and off the list as he goes through these cold streaks that he have, which are particularly brutal compared to, you know, some of the other guys, especially with someone with his upside. It's really frustrating to hold on to him a lot of times because it's just really up and down. When he's bad, he's really bad. When he's good, he's really good.
Last piece of news. There's a handful of prospects who have come up this week. Most of them not fantasy relevant. The one name that I did want to touch on at least is Guardians catcher Cooper Engel, who got called up maybe about 20 minutes before we started recording. He'll make the start for the Guardians at catcher on Friday night. Any thoughts on Cooper Engel before we take a break?
Yeah, Engel actually came up once during the Reddit AMAs too a couple weeks ago. And at the time, Engel had done nothing really but play catcher. So the answer was like, well, there's nowhere for him to go, right? Like there's just nothing he can do. But for the last seven games or so, the Guardians have put Engel in the outfield in the minor leagues. And he's been okay. He's got one error in seven games, which like outfielders don't tend to get a lot of errors because they have to touch it to get an error. But he's apparently looked good enough for the Guardians, who are, I mean, just desperate on offense right now. Other than, you know, Travis Bazana, who's hitting, the rest of the team is really not. There's just not very many threats in this lineup. So, yeah, I mean, they've got Brian Rocchio and Rhys Hoskins is playing every day now. That's how bad it's gotten there. So they were desperate. I think they felt that they could get just as much out of him as they could, you know, the guys they've been playing, like PD Halpin, who I had definitely heard of before, Stuart Fairchild. You know, there's other guys that they can, you know, sort of get rid of. So Cooper Engel will be catcher eligible. So that is a guy you could consider streaming. I don't know how much he'll play exactly, cause he's definitely going to be in the outfield. He's not going to be playing catcher, but he does have 12 home runs already this season. That's a high for him at any, you know, in any professional season for him so far, despite it only being 51 games. It's all in AAA, hitting really, really well. He walks a ton. So if you're in an OBP league, Engel is especially interesting. I'm not sure how much this power will show up in, you know, in this promotion to the majors. He's overperforming his expected stats by a fair margin, which we see a lot in AAA guys for whatever reason. But Engel should be, you know, someone you're looking at, especially in two catcher leagues, or if you're like in a deeper, like a, maybe it's 15 teams, but only one catcher. He could be on your radar again if you just lost a catcher or something like that. He's really, really patient at the plate. He doesn't chase much. And he is good at making contact. So maybe he turns into a little something. But again, playing time is also still a question mark because there are a bunch of outfielders on this team. Most of them just aren't very good is the problem.
Yeah, you know the game that they play, you know, you see sometimes in like YouTube shorts and Instagram reels, like, is this a senator? Is this a relief pitcher? We're getting close to the point where we can do that, where it's congressman or Guardians outfielder. That's how deep on the depth chart they're getting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of names that you probably haven't really heard of, or you've heard of them, but you didn't know they played for the Guardians now. Like that was Stuart Fairchild. I was like, is he not a Red? Like he's still in Ohio, but you know, I didn't realize he'd go anywhere. And, you know, Engel wasn't that great of a fielder as a catcher anyway. So I'm not that shocked to see them try him in a different position. He was mostly known for his hit tool and plate discipline before. That part I expect to carry over into the majors. I'm still not sure about the power. But again, this team's desperate and they don't really care if they think it's real or not. They might as well give it a shot.
Fair enough. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk risers and fallers and Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu talking hitters on Pitcher List. We're diving into Scott's top 150 hitters list, his column that he puts out every week. Scott, we're going to dive right into some risers here this week. And one of the names that jumped the most in the list that I was a little bit surprised by, he's been on my waiver wire in several leagues where I've thought about scooping him and just found an alternative and thought about scooping him and found another alternative. It's Washington Nationals infielder Luis Garcia. Second base eligible. I believe he's been playing first for the Nats. I'd have to check roster resource for that. But he's a guy that at a shallow position has been putting up some numbers.
Yeah, Luis Garcia Jr., who's always annoying to search for anywhere because there's like 80 dudes named Luis Garcia in the major leagues at any given time. He's actually been really good this season. He's been really good for most of the season. So the biggest knock on Garcia Jr. is that he doesn't play against all lefties. He plays against some, but he doesn't play against all. And even when he does, he tends to hit towards the bottom of the order. But that isn't really a problem for me because of how good he is against righties. And you know, it's interesting. He's been a top 60 hitter on the season so far. And yet you still do find him on 12 team waiver wires, partially probably because of the issue with the platoons. But you know, he's not an OBP guy in terms of his OBP is for his career is just under 300. But he does hit for a decent amount of average. He's very much like a put ball and play kind of guy. He doesn't strike out a ton. It's like 16% or so. Most of the time he hasn't run much this season, although that is something he's done in the past. Weirdly enough, this dude's been in the majors like forever. He's only 26 years old, like just barely 26 years old. Luis Garcia Jr. made his debut for the Nats in 2020. Like he's been around for a long time. And you know, what we're kind of seeing, we're not necessarily seeing anything all that different this year compared to years before. We're just seeing him hit the ball a bit harder. Right. In terms of like, you know, it's not like he's getting the ball up in the air more or anything like that. He's not hitting more line drives. He's literally just hitting it harder. So when he debuted, his exit velocity was 83.5, and it sort of steadily climbed every year since then and really takes a big jump this year. So it's like 83.5 and then 86.8, then 87, then 88, then 89, then 90 last year. And this year hitting 92.1. Miles per hour on average, which again is, that's a huge jump. He's gone 10 miles per hour from when almost 10 miles per hour. It's like almost nine miles per hour since he debuted. And this amount of power with how much he can sort of put the ball in play, it's really finally playing. He's actually had an expected, Luis Garcia Jr. has had an expected slugging over 450 for each of the last 3 years. But he's just always kind of ended up as a little bit more of a back end sort of second baseman. The counting stats aren't usually that high because he does get platooned a lot. But I think you need to look right past that for now. This is a guy who can provide some decent batting average. And again, this Nats team is scrappy. They score a bunch of runs. He's already got 49 RBI through 75 games. I think he'll keep getting those because he gets to bat. Right now he's batting second. This lineup is obviously, again, they've had a lot of pieces in this lineup for the Nats take a lot of steps forward that we didn't expect. Like we thought maybe one or two of these guys would break out. But right now, this lineup with Wood, Garcia Jr., Meade, and Abrams at the top, and then some guys showing a little more life in Dylan Cruz, guys who have showed signs before, like Daylan Lyle, Speedster, Nassim Nunez. This team can hit. Like they're a little scary. So number two hitter for that team. Hitting hot right now. He's really been hot for quite a while now. If he is on your waiver wires anywhere, you need to go scoop him.
Making a note of that so I can go and do that after this show in the league that I know he's available. Let's move on to Kansas City, where the next guy that we're going to list in your risers was actually somebody that I recommended in my under-rostered for points league column last week as well. It's a Kansas City Royals catcher, Carter Jensen. Jensen has been leading off for the Royals, which for a catcher, you don't see that very often. Now, granted, he's splitting his time behind the plate and a designated hitter, and he is dipping to fifth in the order against lefties. But so far, Jensen has been outstanding. He's batting like 280 since, I think it was, June 1st, something like that. I put it in my column. I don't know. Okay, so his 11-game hitting streak that he carried into last weekend, he's batting .288 with 12 RBI and 10 runs since June 3rd. So he's been outstanding recently, especially in the month of June, and he's rising up your ranks, Scott.
Yeah, that hitting streak got up to 15 games, actually. So it went up to 15 games, and it extended to 16 today because he hit that two-run shot to end the no-hit bid for the race. So he's at a 16-game hitting streak. This is the Royal that I'm featuring for this article. They're in the feature graphic. It's not the Royal who jumped up the most in the ranks this week. We'll get to him in just a bit. But Carter Jensen's a guy I'm really excited about. So he showed some flash at the beginning of the season. Then he was kind of blah for pretty much the entire month of May. But he's really come back in June. That leadoff spot is really, really exciting for him to be in, especially if Cags continues to hit, Bobby Witt Jr. hitting. You know, Michael Garcia did just hit the IL, but he had already stolen the leadoff spot from him anyway, right? So don't expect a ton of stolen bases. He does have one, but Carter Jensen's putting the hits together in bunches. He's really fixed some of the strikeout issues he had early in the season. They've come down quite a bit there, and now it's as good as it's been really ever. Only his last 15 games, he's striking out less than 15% of the time. The walks, he doesn't have a ton of them of late, but part of that's just because he keeps hitting the ball. You know, so I'm not too worried about that. Yeah, Carter Jensen leading off, getting tons of plate appearances, getting a lot of runs scored from an offense that's finally sort of turning things around right now. Yeah, he's moved up the rankings quite a bit at catcher. So he's a guy I think that we could be talking. You know, I think already he's in this boat of do not, you know, like you're never thinking about streaming at this point. I think he's kind of earned that level of trust. And now the question is like, how much higher can he go? You know, he's all right. You know, right now he's a top 10 catcher. I think there's a conversation. Is this like a top 7, top 6 catcher, which sound you'd love to hear me say like, oh yeah, top 5 catcher. Catcher's crazy deep now. So saying top 5 is, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, if you just think of right off the bat, you've got Rice and you've got Baldwin who's struggling a bit. And we'll talk about that later. Shea Langeliers, like that's 3 of the top 5 already, right? And then you've got William Contreras, you've got Ivan Herrera, you've got Hunter Goodman. You've got a lot of really good catchers. Carter Jensen is starting to move, I think, to the back of that conversation.
Absolutely. You hinted at this earlier in the conversation, Scott. We're going to move right to the next Royal. It's Jack Caglione, first baseman or outfielder or wherever he's playing in Kansas City. It's just been absolutely massacring the baseball, batting third for the Royals. He's number 3 in Fangraphs player rater for the past week. Just been outstanding recently. What have you seen that's been the difference for Caglione recently?
Yeah, so there's a couple things with Caglione that's going on. Like some of it's good, some of it's bad. For example, the strikeouts are still really high. He's still striking out a lot, but he's swinging the bat really hard when he's connecting. There's nothing cheap or like lucky. You know, like I talked before about how guys like Paul Goldschmidt, Zach Eloff, really outperforming their expected stats of late. Like you're getting all the numbers, but they're not actually hitting a whole lot different than they'd been hitting earlier in the season, right? They're just getting results now, which made me nervous. That is not what's happening with Caglione. Jack Caglione is hitting the ball way better than he had before. Like his expected WOBA is like 500 over the last 15 games. It's actually like among the best in baseball over the last 3 weeks, if not the best. I mean, he's hitting the ball at like Yordan Alvarez levels of good right now. And I know the question that people have is like, does this mean he's figured it out? Does this mean he's for real? What I can tell you is that everything he's doing right now is real in that this is not luck, right? Does that mean this is going to continue? No. I mean, there's no hitter that is this good all the time, right? Not even a Yordan Alvarez or whatever, right? I mean, if you just look at the month of June itself, which, you know, has been by far the best month of his career, there's just certain things about it that cannot stay true. His home run fly ball rate right now is 50%, right? Barry Bonds had like a 20%, 20 to 25. Aaron Judge can sometimes touch 30%. Nobody can sustain a 50% home run fly ball rate. It just doesn't work like that, right? So the real question with Caglione for me has been that fly ball rate overall is actually quite low. It's 32.7%. He's someone who you usually want to see up at like 40% for fly ball rate. And one of the reasons I think he could get there is because he's hitting 30% line drives this month. That is another thing that Caglione just will not continue to do. Very few players hit 30% line drives. The ones that do tend to be more of the slap style hitters like Luis Arraez. Freddie Freeman does it, but like he's also not a, you know, perennial 35 plus home run guy, especially not anymore, because he does a lot of like line drive slapping all over the field. Cags isn't that kind of hitter, right? So there's three potential ways that this could sort of go down. Either he continues to just rush the ball every time he's putting it in the air, and he's a big home run hitter and just a little bit streaky because of the strikeouts and the fact that he doesn't really walk much at all. He could become like just really good, but streaky power hitter. That's sort of like the Kyle Schwarbers of the world, except again, he walks a little less than that. Another thing that could happen is it's a little bit more frustrating because those line drives, that 30% line drives, a lot of that transitions into ground balls, and that turns into like a low batting average hitter. That's a lot of what we've seen of Cags for his career so far, right? A lot of ground balls, a lot of frustration because all that power is trapped in ground balls, right? We see hitters go through this all the time. Jordan Walker is a guy who did this for years. He's finally broken out. I mean, he's having some of his own issues right now anyway, just, you know, he hasn't been quite as good, but yeah. So Cags could start hitting more ground balls. That'd be a problem, but the best possible path is the strikeouts stay under 30% and a bunch of those line drives turn to fly balls. And that way, even though the home run fly ball rate for Cags won't be 50%, when it gets cut in half, he's hitting enough fly balls where that's still an awesome home run amount, right? Again, it's really tough to see a guy be a consistent power hitter with like less than 35% fly balls because there's just not enough of them. I think the one time we really saw it was back in the rabbit ball era with Christian Yelich. He actually survived with this kind of batted ball profile. I cannot think of another guy who has, right? So the batted ball profile is going to change. The more of those line drives that become fly balls, the better this works out long-term. And I'm talking like I'm being negative. I'm raising him over 50 spots on the list. He is blown up, right? I've brought him up to, you know, inside the top 75 for sure. It'll probably be somewhere around 60 to 65 that he ends up. That's a massive jump. That means because of how much I believe in like how hard he can hit the ball and what the upside is. But just keep in mind, none of this stuff is permanent. They're all rolling charts. Everybody has ups and downs. With Cags, we know what those could be. If the strikeout rate gets up over 30% for an extended time, that's going to be a problem. The ground ball rate gets up over like 45-50%, like we've seen it in the past, that's going to be a problem. But if he can avoid those things, or you know, make sure neither of those things lasts too long, then we start talking about Cags as like a top 50, top 40 hitter. There's a ton of upside there with all that power, but be ready for more ups and downs as well. That's why he's not just instantly inside the top 50. Of course he has that kind of upside. Of course, I mean, you could talk about him as a guy with like top 30 upside. The problem is, I don't know how often he's going to tap into that. How often do we see spike like this? How long, and I know I say this all the time, how long until we see another stretch kind of like this, right? You know, how long will it last and how long till we see it again? Those are the things we don't know yet, because this is the first time he's ever done this, right? Cags has been incredibly disappointing in his major league career up till now, right? You just look at his career numbers to know, but you know, he's taking a huge step forward here. I think this is, again, this is a huge opportunity to continue hitting third, be in the heart of this lineup, just watch the strikeouts, which, you know, one of the reasons I bring that up in that game today, he did go 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. So that's the thing to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on the strikeouts, keep an eye on the ground balls.
We go from one streaky hitter to another. This guy hit 207 in the month of May. In the month of June, he turned things around. He's hitting 349 with 5 home runs. I'm talking about none other than New York Mets infielder Bo Bichette. Bichette's a guy who I had kind of written off as just, okay, he's not good at baseball anymore. And boy, was I wrong. He has looked outstanding. 30 hits, 5 home runs in the month of May. or I'm sorry, in the month of June, over 86 at bats. He matched his home run totals in these 86 June at bats to the previous 230 that he put together to begin the season through the end of May. So he has matched his home run total for the season in this month alone. And we're only, you know, we've still got a week of it left. So, but Bichette's been outstanding, Scott. What have you seen that's different?
Bichette's June slugging of 616 is higher than his April or May OPS. Right, his OPS for those months were 590 and 576. He's slugging 616 this month. We've actually talked about this before. We've seen Bichette go through these like insane, like be really bad, and then go through this like insane spurt. And one of the things that we were worried about was like, how often can you count on that happening? Right. And I mean, it is happening right now, right? Like, he's been one of the very best hitters in all baseball for the last 2 weeks. It's, you know, what else can you say? And again, it's not luck, right? It's not as though like, oh yeah, again, this isn't a situation where we've got, you know, oh yeah, I mean, he's not actually hitting it that well. He's just getting the better results. That's not how June has gone for him. It's all very, you know, it's not quite as real as the actual results, but it's real enough that even if you peel the luck away, you've got a pretty good hitter, right? And that's sort of the other way to look at, you know, if you look at just from like June 11th to today, his ex-WOBA is almost 100 points lower than his WOBA. But that's because his WOBA's 481 and his ex-WOBA's 394. Like, strip all that luck away, a 394 WOBA would be amazing, right? That's still a really, really good hitter. So it's like, I don't necessarily care that the luck is there. Like, yeah, he's slugging 741 in that stretch. That's not going to continue, right? But, you know, the fact that he remains capable of these kinds of outbursts means, you know, we can't write him off quite yet. Again, the question is, how often can he come back to this? I'd hate to have to suffer through another month of a sub 600 OPS to get to this again. But the fact that it's still here means that the leash is real long, right? It probably would take another 2 months of sub 600 OPS for me to be like, eh, I'm out on Bichette again.
Well, we'll shift from a former second baseman to a second baseman, Cleveland Guardians second baseman, Travis Bezzana. You mentioned him earlier. He's one of the only people in the Guardians organization that's hitting the baseball right now. He's a guy who thrived in OBP formats. Really good plate discipline, really good walk rate to begin his career. And now he's really starting to hit the ball. Scott, what do you like about Bezzana here?
That we're seeing the power, right? That was the thing that was kind of missing. He hit, you know, he's been around and he kind of just had the smattering of home runs here and there. And he had a really, really tough streak to sort of start the month of June. So up until like a week or so ago, June had been really, really hard on Bezzana. If you just go from the 1st to the 17th, it was a 146 batting average with a 292 slug. The plate discipline was still good, and he swiped a couple bags, but he just could not hit the ball very hard, right? And again, this wasn't a bad luck thing. The expected stats and the regular stats were pretty much the same. They were just terrible. But he's made a really nice adjustment really over the last week. He's hit three home runs. He's got a stolen base there. The strikeouts are up a little bit, but I don't care because he's slugging 704 over the last week. So again, I think the power is going to be a little in and out on Bezzana, but the speed continues. The walks continue. I think the overall line is probably about where it ought to be. He's hitting 261 on the season. I think he can continue to do that, maybe a little better, which is a lot better than the projections have for him. They've all got him hitting like 230 something. I think he can be a lot better than that. Again, don't expect this kind of power all the time, but the good plate discipline, the stolen bases with some power, I think that's very real. I think he can end the season. You know, he won't have played a full season, but I think he can end the season with around 15 home runs, 25 stolen bases and good ratios, with upside for maybe more like 17 to 18 home runs. If he finds a couple more power outbursts like this, but yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot to like there from the Aussie down in Cleveland. The only problem you're going to have is the counting stats. They are going to lag because this offense is putrid right now. Even, you know, he's leading off for them, which is great because that means he gets more plate appearances, but who's supposed to drive him in, right? Kyle Manzardo, Brian Rocchio, Rhys Hoskins, Daniel Schneeman, Khalil Watson, Stephen Kwan, Patrick Bailey, and Petey Halpin. That's the regular lineup. That's bad. Like, that's really bad. that right now, that's probably like the most, I would be streaming every pitcher against the Guardians right now. Like, that'd be my number one target. I can't think of an offense right now that is worse on paper than this one. So that is, I mean, that's just going to hurt the county stats. There's not much. The loss of Jose Ramirez has been the offense that keeps this, is like the engine of this whole offense and always has been. And without him, it's going to be ugly.
Nothing like kicking the city of Cleveland while it's down. it's Cleveland, so it's always down. But we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk fallers on Scott's List after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here as always with senior analyst Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on Pitcher List, diving into Scott's top 150 hitters list. We talked about the risers. Now let's get to the fallers. And we start with a guy who hasn't necessarily fallen that far on the list, Scott, but he's down, you know, 7-8 spots. It's Atlanta catcher Drake Baldwin. Looks a little different after coming back from injury. Do you have any concerns here now that you've seen him play ball after his injury for a week or so?
I think they're still a very good player here, obviously. But it's really hard not to be concerned when, like, yes, he hit a home run in his very first game back. But the problem was I kind of overlooked the fact that he also struck out a bunch of times in that game. Right. So since coming back, 32 plate appearances for Drake Baldwin, still playing every day. One, he's not hitting the ball very hard at all in this small sample. That's a bit of a problem. The real big problem is that he has zero walks and a 57.6% strikeout rate. Like, make sure you hear 57, zero walks and 19 strikeouts in 8 games. Right. That's averaging more than 2 per game. He has multiple strikeouts in all but 2 of those. So 6 games, he's got multiple strikeouts in 4 of those 8 games. He has 3 strikeouts or more, right? So he's got 3 strikeout games and a 4 strikeout game. And one of these 8 games was just a pinch hit appearance, right? And he ended up getting 2 plate appearances and he struck out in one of those, right? Like, something's way off with Drake Baldwin. Now, it's really important to note, this is not really something actionable. You're not benching Drake Baldwin with how good he was prior to coming out, like coming back. There's absolutely no way you're entertaining the idea, right? Like, I guess all you could really say is, man, maybe he needed more than 1 game rehab, right? But like, he hit a home run in that rehab game and he didn't strike out. So it's really hard to point to something, be like, oh, it's because of this, it's because of that. It's just something's really, really off. And I mean, it's raised his season strikeout rate by like 5% in just these 8 games. It's obscene. So I think obviously there's still going to be a very, very good player here, but I couldn't keep him in the top tier until we see that get fixed. Because it's also worth noting that while Drake Baldwin had a pretty decent year last year, what he's done this year is way beyond what he showed us last year. So I'm, you know, there's a little bit of hesitation because it's not like he has this super long track record, Drake Baldwin, of being this level of good. Maybe the problem is he's faced a ton of lefties, which is true, right? Like, he's seen 3 righty starters and 4 lefty starters so far. And then that game where he didn't start, that was another lefty. Like, it's just Atlanta has seen a ton of lefties. Maybe that's it. Although, like, even that would be a red flag, right? Because it's like, well, you can't be this bad against lefties. And he hasn't been bad against lefties all season. He's been quite good against them. In fact, he's been better against lefties than against righties. 901 OPS against lefties on the season so far. And that includes all this garbage we've seen of the last 8 games. So hopefully this is just like a little blip, but the strikeout rate was climbing a little bit right before he went on the IL. And to see it spike so hard when he came back is a little bit concerning.
We'll go from one player who is having strikeout issues to another who has had strikeout issues on and off for quite a while. And that's San Francisco third baseman, Matt Chapman. Talk to me about what you've seen from Chapman, because a couple weeks ago we were talking about maybe this is, you know, him turning things around, but now he's back on the fallers list. Scott, what's going on?
Yeah, well, other than that, you know, he has this like really nice streak at the beginning of this month of, you know, it only ends up being a couple games, but just from like June 1st through the 14th, so like the first half of June, he looked like Matt Chapman, right? I mean, he had six home runs in that time. He was slugging 902. The expected stats are great. He was walking more than he struck out in these 54 plate appearances. He was just on fire, on absolute fire. He had a pair of two home run games. There was nothing not to like. And then since then, he's been worse than he was, you know, good, right? So he's hitting in the last 30 plate appearances, he's hitting 038 with an 038 slug because it's just one hit, which is a single, right? Like he has more RBI. He has three RBI on one hit because I think he's got some sack flies, but he's not hitting the ball hard. He's striking out a bunch again. He's sort of undone a lot of the good stuff that he did. And so he's got to fall because I'm like, look, dude, if I had to wait through all of that garbage. So this is what I was talking about early in the pod. And this is sort of like the bad case scenario, like the worst case scenario for what happens with Cags is you have this great 2 weeks and then you just go back to what you were doing before, making it so that like, no matter how good that 2 weeks is, it's just not worth it to wait 2 months for two good weeks and then wait 2 months again for two good weeks. You can't live that way. Even in Roto, the final result's just not going to be good enough. So this is like that sort of worst case scenario for him. He did have two walks and a hit today, which I guess helps a little, but I don't really care because it's not any power. It was just a single. What we need to see is him hitting for power. He's not doing that right now. So, you know, again, it was a great 2 weeks, but man, if you have to wait this long, you know, if you have to wait 2 months or even 1 month just to get that, just to get those 50 plate appearances and then wait another 100, you know, 150 plate appearances to get it again, it's not going to be worth it. So even though he's eligible at third base, which is a tough position, Matt Chapman's got to take a tumble. I'm not saying you necessarily have to cut him yet. I'd really want to know what's on your wire, but I'm very disappointed that that was all we got, was 54 good plate appearances.
Well, we'll move on from a guy who tumbled about 30 spots to a guy who free fell almost 60 spots, maybe even a little more than 60 spots. That's Washington outfielder Dalen Lyle. What do you do with Dalen Lyle at this point, Scott?
I mean, I was patient. I was so patient for so long, being like, look, he's got skills, and he would show like a little bit of something for like a week or two, and then he would fall away again. He's still hitting towards like the middle of this lineup, so I really wanted to be patient and see what happens. I mean, he even had a decent day today. He hit a double with a run and an RBI. The counting stats are there, but the performance is so erratic from Dalen Lyle. It's we're not getting the ratios we got in the first half or what we saw from him last year. And so if you like combine the 2 years together, you've got like just over a full season of a guy who has like, who's going to average about like 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases, which again, that's what we're seeing now. The question is, you know, last year he's a 299 hitter. This year he's 248. A guy who goes 15-15 and hits 250 just isn't that interesting, right? Like maybe a little, that's like a back end outfielder. Cause again, this is an outfielder. This isn't like a middle infielder. This isn't like a third baseman at this position of need. In a three outfield league, outfield is the easiest position to fill, right? There's tons of guys that are good at any given time. So a guy, if he's more of like a 15-15 guy with, you know, okay ratios, then it's really hard to get all that excited about Dalen Lyle. I keep waiting to see that contact hitting, that, you know, that sort of line drive approach that we saw last year that I thought he could repeat because he was a line drive hitter all through the minor leagues. He has not found that line drive stroke. A lot of those line drives have turned to fly balls. When you're a guy who doesn't hit the ball that hard, that's a big problem, because those fly balls won't leave the yard. So if some of those fly balls can turn back into line drives, Dalen Lyle becomes a guy that I'm really excited about, because 15-15 while hitting 280 is really good. 15-15 while hitting 250 is not. So that's what we're waiting for. I'd like to see more of those fly balls turned to line drives. Until then, he's going to be more of like a back end slash like guy you might cut because there's a good streaming option out there or something like that.
Now, speaking of guys we might cut, we've got another outfielder that we need to talk about. He's barely hanging on to a spot in your top 150. We thought that maybe he had turned things around earlier this season, and it's just going haywire again. It's Boston outfielder Jarren Duran down to 145, down 53 spots, Scott. Barely hanging on to a spot on the list. What are we doing with Jarren Duran?
Yeah, so the first time he got pretty much taken off the list because he got platooned because he had been so bad to start the season, right? Like Jarren Duran has a pretty awful April to start the year. He had just one home run. He was hitting 170. And then in the month of May, what's he do? He hits 9 home runs, hits 261. And we're like, oh, okay, he's back. This is great. And then guess what? In June, month's almost over. He's got 2 home runs. He's hitting 143. Right. And a lot of stuff has really sort of gone to heck. The strikeout rate is totally out of control. He's striking out 37.5% of the time in June. The walks are pretty much gone. It's a 10-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio so far. This is now his second month with an OPS under 500. It was 481 in April. It's 422 in June. No matter how good he was in May, it's really hard to stomach a guy who's going to be this high and low, especially one who, you know, like that 9 home run month is cool, but he'd never really done that before. I don't ever expect him to do that again, right? He only hit 16 home runs all of last year, right? So the overall numbers aren't good. Like the home runs and stolen bases look good, right? He'd be on pace for probably about 25 home runs and over 20 steals, but he's hitting 199 on the season. Again, the strikeouts have just gotten out of control. He's not walking at all, which is something he had done pretty well at the year before. I want off this ride, especially in the outfield, right? Especially in a 3 outfield league, I want off this ride, right? It's just, I can't roster someone who's this bad, especially in like a weekly league or sort of like a head-to-head league where you don't, you know, all that good stuff he did in May isn't helping you anymore. You know, it's not helping boost the totals. It's just, I want off this ride. I don't think the juice is going to be worth the squeeze. So unless he really starts turning things around in short order, he'll just be off the list and a guy that you can stream when he's hot and then let go. Like he's currently a top 110 hitter per the Fangraphs player rater. And that's all from like 2.5 weeks. So if he wasn't playing for you for those 2.5 weeks, you got none of that juice. All you've had is the bad. Which again, this is like a common thing. Guys can be really, really good for 2 weeks and then just not be good enough in between those hot streaks to make it worth your while. And I think that's what we're seeing with Jarren Duran now for whatever reason. I don't know how he turned into this, but that's what we've got.
Yeah, it's been such a weird change. Like he was a top 30 hitter at one point last season, like for a lot of last season. And now he's barely even a top 50 outfielder. I'm not sure if I could even call him that right now.
Yeah. I think he's a guy who, you know, if you're trying to go get a streamer, like if you want speed, like Chandler Simpson's back on the list now, because he hadn't stolen a base in like a month. He'd been really unsuccessful. And then he stole like 5 bases in the last week. Right. So it's like, look, if you want to stream for speed, go do that. You want a guy with a bit of a power speed blend, and who doesn't have worse ratios than, you know, who isn't going to have terrible ratios. Dylan Cruz looks like he might be something. Like, go ahead and try that, you know, or, you know, Henry Bolt is ranked now. He's jumped up a bit. He's leading off for Oakland. I think that could be a guy who can give you a bit of a boost who might still be out there. Jarren Duran's teammate, Caleb Durbin, is hitting the cover off the ball right now, eligible at second and third. He's probably been scooped in a lot of leagues because he sits right at the top of the past 15 days or whatever. But yeah, I think there's enough other options that you don't really need to do this to yourself.
Anybody else that we need to touch on before we sign off for the night?
Yeah. I think one thing to mention is just that Nico Horner hit a little bit, so he didn't fall off the top 150 yet. He's still clinging on, just kind of making it work. Nolan Chanuel got ranked. This is really more for points leaguers. Nolan Chanuel is really nice in points leagues. He puts a ton of balls in play. He strikes out less than 10% of the time. He walks close to 10% of the time. So, you know, those are guys I think that you'd really want to like. I think guys who are at the risk. So guys who fell like over 30 spots who are at risk of doing that again are going to be like Ernie Clement. I'm really worried. I know we talked about him a lot last week. He's just not hitting the ball hard at all. I know he's an all-star, but he's just not playing well. And, you know, if you're trying to move, if you're in a 12-team league, he's going to be below that line where, if you wanted to swap out Ernie Clement and go pick up like Samad Taylor, who's been hot since, you know, getting promoted by the Padres, go for it, dude. Like, I'm not going to stop you. Right. Or if someone has cut Curtis Mead because he's, you know, he's been more solid than spectacular, like I would absolutely go and grab him and let a guy like Ernie Clement go, even though Clement technically has had a better season. So, you know, that's a guy I'm worried about. Alex Bregman took another big fall. I'm still worried about him. We're just not seeing the results and there's not really time to be patient anymore. Joe Adele, another big faller. We're just not seeing the power. A guy trending down who trended up all through the first like 2 months of the season, who's now trending down, Christian Walker. I've got some concerns there that, you know, maybe he's only got about two good months in him in a season. That's what we saw last year. That's kind of what we're seeing again. So hopefully he can turn it around, but I'm not sure yet. Josh Young took another big fall. That's something to keep an eye out for. And then guys that are ranked a little higher that took a fall would be Kyle Tucker takes another one. JJ Bleda takes another fall. Luis Arraez fell, even though he's kind of not hitting poorly, just because I don't know how good the Giants are. I have no idea. I mean, not only are they terrible at PR right now, but you know, the guys that were heating up that were supposed to turn this offense around, like Willy Adames, Matt Chapman, they fell off a cliff again, which means, yeah, it's great that Arraez is leading off, but the guys behind him aren't hitting. So it's, you know, Bryce Eldridge took a big fall because he's really struggled the last couple of weeks. So yeah, lots of not good things happening in Giant land. So a couple Giants all take the fall as well, but you know, I think we covered a lot of the biggest risers. Oh, except for one. I should at least mention Wyatt Langford. Asking all year, why do I hold on to Wyatt Langford? Why do I keep holding on to Wyatt Langford? Wyatt Langford hasn't done that much. And I kept saying, like, look, we see these glimpses from Wyatt Langford every season. Some, it's only been for a couple of weeks, and then he gets hurt. But, you know, Wyatt Langford hit another home run today. So that gives him, let's see, how many since he's been back? One. That's six home runs since he's been back. Seven. I mean, he's just ripped. I mean, it's especially a ton in just over the last week or so. Like, he hit one on the 18th, the 19th, the 21st, the 24th, and now the 25th. Dude is ripping the cover off the ball right now. He's getting the ball out of the yard. And, you know, it's not, again, this is not a thing where it's a bunch of luck that's kind of driving it up. Now, there is some luck baked in, of course. Like, when you see these guys on these crazy hot streaks, usually that expected WOBA isn't going to be as good as the WOBA. But again, yeah, as WOBA's 550, which is obscene over the last like eight games. But the ex-WOBA's 493, which is really, really good. So I don't really care about the big gap there because he's hitting the ball really well. It's obviously going to slow down. There's still a ton of injury risk here. There's a ton of slump risk here. Wyatt Langford's been so up and down. But there's a reason he was also at one time a top one or two prospect in all of baseball. So I think, you know, hopefully you've been able to be patient. I always said that it'd be a really hard call to cut him, and it's because he's capable of doing this. Wyatt Langford is capable of being one of the best hitters in all of baseball for weeks at a time. The question is, again, can he stay healthy, and how long between these spurts do we have to wait so that we can actually start getting the juice, right? He was a 2020 guy last year. There's obviously upside for more than that. Like, you know, when he got originally called up, we talked about him as a 30 to 35 home run guy who can also steal 15 to 20 bases. I think that's still in there. He's only 24 years old. It could all be there, but don't be shocked if we have more frustration throughout the rest of the season. What you need to remember is that this is a guy that's at least worth holding, just because we know what he is capable of when he runs hot.
Don't laugh at me for referencing ESPN leagues, but Langford was available in 40% of ESPN leagues as of last weekend. So I couldn't believe it when I saw that he was on the waiver wire in my one league, but scooped him up and hopefully he's paying dividends for me.
Yeah, because all of his home, like he, I don't think he had a home run before he hit the IL, right? No, he did. He had one. He hit one on April. He had one on April 10th and he's been out since April 21st, right? And he was off to a really, really slow start. So, and then he didn't exactly start hitting the ball immediately after he came back up either. It was like a slow week. And I'm sure there was people like, never mind, forget it. And then of course, over the last 10 games or so, he's been out of his mind, but yeah, keep the potential's all there. Wyatt Langford right now will be, close to my top 50, maybe just inside the top 50. So keep an eye out for him. I don't expect him to be on your wires, but there's upside for more here. The problem is he may also fall 30 spots if we have to wait, if we go through another one of these painful months. And I tend to be really volatile with outfielders, even ones I believe in, because it's like, look, I write this for three outfield, like 12 team leagues, three or four outfielders. You can't have a ton of patience. Again, you'll have more for a guy like Langford who has all the pedigree in the world, who has shown us these really, really high peaks. But at some point, month, 2 month, 3 months, you have to just be like, look, it's not worth it anymore. But let's see. We'll see how this continues. He's not the biggest riser. Obviously, that's going to be Jack Caglione. He's going to move up about 50 spots. Langford's moving up about 40.
Well, Scott, that does it for this episode of Hacks and Jacks. Tell the people where to find you and your work.
Yeah, of course, you can find me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits. You can find me on Blue Sky, Scott Chew, scott.chew at pitcherlist.com. And of course, my work, you can find me, the Reddit AMA will be up on Friday around noon or so over on r/fantasybaseball. And my Hitterlist article is a little bit late, but hopefully by the time you're hearing this, it has been published. If not, it'll be published sometime in the earlier part of Friday. I just had couple life and work things come up, so I couldn't finish it during the day on Thursday, but I do have the rankings pretty much roughed out. I just got to write up all the blurbs, so hopefully I'll be able to have that up bright and early on Friday. But go and check that out. Go check out the AMA. Lots of big movement on the list this week, even more so than usual, just because I am becoming a lot more aggressive with outfielders.
Excellent. Of course, you can find me at FadeThatMan on the socials, in the Discord, and under rostered players for Points League's column on Mondays on Pitcher List, and of course on the QB List podcast network, chopping it up with Jay Felicio talking fantasy football. Fantasy football season is creeping up on us, so make sure you check us out at QBList.com as well, the sister site for Pitcher List. That's all for this week of Hacks and Jacks. For Scott, I'm Brett. Thanks for tuning in. See ya.